This is the official EFL podcast with Mark Clement.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the official EFL podcast with me, Mark Clement. After a week in which in the Sky Bet Championship, surely one of the most patched up teams of all time, Reading without their first choice goalkeeper, any fit centre halves, or last season's prolific strike duo, Zhao and Mate, still managed to see off Middlesbrough. In Sky Bet League One, Sunderland paid tribute to their record appearance holder for an outfield player, Len Ashurst, who passed away at the age of 82. He also went on to manage them, along with Hartlepool United, Gillingham, Sheffield Wednesday, Newport County and Cardiff City twice. And in Sky Bet League 2, Bristol Rovers picked up their first away win in 20 matches, their worst run for four decades. It's the official EFL podcast. In the Sky Bet Championship then, by their own previous standards in 2021, QPR have had a little bit of a blip of late, losing three in a row until they saw off Birmingham City. In the midweek round of fixtures, a huge part of that success in this calendar year has been since the return at first on loan and now permanently of Charlie Austin. And I can see you, Charlie, and I must continue a conversation I had with you face-to-face a few weeks ago. You're obsessed with your hair, mate. You've been doing nothing but playing with it for the last couple of minutes.
I know, mate. Last night wasn't good. It was lashing down in West London last night. So I dread to see the match photos where it could look a bit thin on top, mate. But, oh, well.
Is this worrying you, mate? Is this you seem quite relaxed with going bald previously. Now you seem to be hinting you're a bit worried about it.
Some days I'm all right, and other days I'm not, mate. It is what it is.
Yeah, with your celebrity status, though, surely a sort of deal with one of these hair transplant-y companies must be on the cards.
Don't interest me that, Clem. Don't interest me. If, like I say, if I'm going, I'll just whip it off and I just have to grow a strong beard, won't I?
Yeah, if only I could do the same. I obviously have the hairstyle you are referring to. As for strong beard, well, this is the official EFL podcast. I can't use the language I normally would to describe my pitiful excuse for a beard. Listen, mate, it feels like you and QPR are just the most perfect fit. Was last time around and seems to be once again.
Yeah, it seems to be. I think both times now, when I first went there, the club wasn't in such transition, but they had such big name players. The fans probably wanted someone that they could relate to, I guess. And because I had such good success getting promoted and then individual success in the Premier League, it kind of was a match made in heaven, shall we say. And then the second time, I needed their help and they needed mine. I mean that by I need their help because a manager to give me game time, Clem. And they needed someone to come and help them out of the situation they was in. And very fortunate both fell into place.
Again, we had this conversation on Football Focus a couple of weeks ago, but I'm going to have it now. Your manager, Mark Warburton, said we weren't nasty enough, so I brought in Charlie Austin, which I took as a compliment on your behalf, Charlie.
Yeah, I think so did I, Clem, really. You have a reputation, nothing like that, but you have to be nasty sometimes. You have to be nasty within the rules of the game. You need to have the dark arts. You need to, and do you know what? You need to be told the truth every now and then. Sometimes the truth hurts. Not everyone can take it, but I think that's what I done when I first went in there to the football club. The second time around was very honest with the lads and just said, listen, I need you to help me as much as I'm coming in to help you. But at the moment you're underperforming and that's why you're in the situation you are. So as a team, not as a group of individuals, as I watched over the last three or four games, as a team, let's stick together and try and get out of it. And for our first eight games, we'd won seven and got beat to Derby at home 1-0, although we were just had an off day then. And then we went on for the second half, the remainder of the season. I think we was third. Was it third over the second half of the season, I think? Enough, even if you look now, I think we've got 15 points. Like you said early on, we had a blip where we hadn't won in three. And when I signed on the 8th of January, we had 21 points. Yeah. I've done my research.
Yeah, you have. You have. And also you're being very modest because I've placed a lot of the turnaround at your door. What did you bring back to the club that you didn't have when you left? How have you changed in your time away? What have you added to your mix?
experience, Premier League experience. I was fortunate to play in a bit of Europa League, play with some world-class players. And then just, I don't know, just I played plenty of games, so just managed to learn on the job, really, Clem. Played with good players, managed by Ronald Koeman, who was Holland manager, Barcelona manager, Slaven Bilic. Do you know what I mean? So all good managers taking little bits from all individuals. And I guess I've just grown as a character, really. And then just, I don't know, brought the older figure back.
When did you become so comfortable in your own skin, Charlie?
I don't know, since I was about, I don't know, 19, 20? Don't know.
Really? Because when I look at where you were, you know, let's be frank, this is your 13th season as a pro.
No, Clem, do you know what? Not that. When I went to Swindon, I was very nervous. I was still young, raw. I didn't really care about much because I was going there. If it was going to work, great. If it wasn't, I would just go back playing non-league. I went to Burnley and then I would say in my last season at Burnley, my daughter was born August the 11th on a Saturday. And the season started the following Saturday and we played Port Vale on the Tuesday. And I would say then, I'd do a lot of growing up. Me and my wife, see now, did a lot of growing up. We lived in Burnley just together in a two-bedroom flat. And then kind of you had to grow up a bit quick. I was only 23. And I think that was a part of it because from then to November the 20th, I scored 20 goals. I broke the records at Burnley when I scored the fastest 20 goals, beat Andy Lockhead's thing, 8 consecutive games, etc. And then I moved to West London, then I had to grow up again. I don't know. Then I've always had this bubbly character, aggressive character. I don't know.
Yeah.
Controlled arrogance, I like to call it, Clem.
Well, but with a smile on your face as well, it's like you're not afraid to take the mickey out of yourself either. And getting that balance right is important, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. And I feel that is really important. Like I said, take this season, for example, the first start of it, to get through pre-season, really looking forward. I took a knock against Millwall, disappointed, missed a couple of games. Then I had a personal life going on. That was me nan passed away and that affected me more than ever. And then the last couple of games, started playing with a smile on my face again, really enjoying it. I think my family and my mates who come and watch have seen that now, that we can see that you're playing with a smile on your face again. And I think that's so important to me, I think, because I always say when you're a big character, a loud character, a bubbly character, you can't really have an off day. What I mean by that is if you're on a day where you're not so bubbly or loud, everyone's like, what's up with Chaz today? What's up with Chaz? He seems a bit off. And sometimes you just have them days like everyone.
Yeah. I mean, you know, last time at QPR, you know, you're stretching into a squad with Rob Green, Nico Cranshaw, Richard Dunn, Yossi Benayoun. But now, of course, you're kind of the figurehead, aren't you? So you do carry that responsibility. And some of the younger players who haven't had the career you have are looking to you for guidance, leadership, tone setting.
Yeah, I'm very fortunate. Obviously, our captain, Stefan Johansson, he's Norwegian captain, over 50 odd caps for them, so he's a massive player also in that kind of older area that's been there and done it. If you look at the younger lads, they look at us, they ask you questions. I'm very honest to them. I'm very honest. I think that's the best way, and I say to them, you just got to do more after training, before training, because that's what the top boy has done. When I went to Southampton and realised, and I see Dusan Tadic doing it every time after training, I see fullbacks Ryan Bertrand, who won Champions League, practicing whipping balls in the box. So if he's doing that to work on his craft, why are you not doing it? Why are you not spending 15 minutes after training just whipping balls in for fun? Because the elite do. You see that with Dusan when he went to Ajax and tore it up in the Bernabeu two years ago.
Can I ask you about the other side of things, which is Senny Dieng last weekend. Now, for me, along with Brad Collins at Barnsley, I think he's been mercurial this season. But obviously, yep. Awful blooper against West Brom last week. How does the dressing room help him in the aftermath of that? Because the kid must have been distraught, wasn't it? Do you just ignore it? Do you have it out with him? What happens?
You can't ignore it. You can't ignore things like that. Because if you don't make them mistakes, we win the game. And that's unfortunate for goalkeeper because that's the position they're in, Clem. That might sound harsh. People listen, it might sound harsh, but they're in a position where they can't make a mistake. I can miss a chance, get another one. They can't allow one to go in, unfortunately. Do you know what I mean? Like that. So you have to tell them. But he knows, and he knows he messed up in that one. And okay, you can say cost us a point, shall we say? I do believe if they don't score one, we win the game 1-0. I don't think they actually get the next goal. But you have to tell them. You've got to be honest. But it wasn't just him. We give the ball away for the second goal in stupid area in the 88th minute instead of just kicking it long, playing for position, not possession, like kind of thing. That's how I see it. But Senny will learn on them mistakes and learn from that, and he will grow as a goalkeeper and grow in his character. And I think that's the only way people will learn. That's how I learn, and I don't really know how to not get my point across without kind of speaking or shouting. I guess I just wear my heart on the sleeve, and players have got to be told, I guess.
Yeah, well, that is the one thing I've found working with some footballers and coaches is the level of honesty you guys can take is quite breathtaking. You want its feedback straight between the eyes, yeah. Even if it's the most hurtful possible. No hugging each other and all that
Because
stuff.
I think it's the best bang. Way is there's no grudges held. I'm just telling you, giving it to you, that's the truth. So as tomorrow comes, when next day we come to training, it's done. It's no grudge, no held on for another day and another day and another day. Because there's a game coming in 3 days. So when we give it to Senny, if he come in on Sunday, he's moping around Monday, he didn't even have a shot to save last night. Controlled the game, he took aerially great, managed the game really well as a goalkeeper could. And he was the same goalkeeper we've had for the whole season bar West Brom.
Tell me something, are the characteristics around the squad now that were similar to when you got promoted back in 2014, wasn't it?
I think it's tough because we had an older team then, a lot more experienced team. But the younger players, do you think when we was there, Clem, like you named them earlier, that if you just go off the team that played in the playoff final, Rob Green was in goal, Danny Simpson, Richard Dunn, Ned Amanua, Clint Hill, Cranchar, Gary O'Neill, Joey Barton, Carl Henry, myself, Bobby Zamora, Kevin Doyle. Well, the 11 out of the 12 I just named then all played in the Premier League, all been internationals.
Yeah.
So I think there's similarities, but we are going in our own different direction.
Yeah.
Trying to emulate what we did in 2014, of course, but we're going in a different direction.
Yeah. And we should say as well that it feels like where QPR are this season is a culmination of the work that's been going on during Mark Warburton's time at the club, just over 2 years.
Yeah, I was going to say that, Clem. I think credit's got to go to the gaffer. Like I said to you when we did the interview a couple of weeks ago, I think he's been brilliant. He's been superb with me since the moment I come through the door, even to the first time I've spoken to him on the phone. And we have a great relationship. And I think all credit to him. And he's found a way to make us better as a squad and adapted with the players we've got. We play in a style 3-5-2 and we can change to a back four if we want, but he's got a style and a philosophy that he wants to stick to. And the lads have embraced that and we've gone on as a unit, not just three or four players, the whole squad and the whole club, I feel like, has changed. Since the turn of the year, I think the whole club's changed.
Tell me something. Are you at the stage in your life where you reflect on the career you've had? Do you ever wonder what that kid carrying the hod up the ladder to...
Funny you say that. I think it was 13 years ago, his mental. My wife put a Facebook status up or something, just saying, when I'd signed for Swindon or whatever. And that was, like I say, 13 years ago. And then you look back and just think, wow, that went so fast. That's just gone so fast. So for 13 years, when I first signed for Swindon, I went there as a naive 20-year-old, not knowing anything, to having two promotions, playing in the Premier League, etc., called up for your country. It's just gone so fast. Could I imagine what had happened? No. I don't think I'll reflect back on it until it's actually done, Claire, until I actually hang up the boots. I don't want to do that anytime soon, of course. But I don't think I'll appreciate what I've managed to, on a personal note, achieve. Until it's all over, I don't think.
In the house you're in now or any of the houses you've been in, have you had people in to do work? Because I should imagine you're a hard taskmaster if some of those brickies are not getting the mix right.
I have. All my dad's men have come in. I don't like it. I don't tell them. Mrs. A's out there telling them.
is she?
She's out there.
Tell me something. Is there like a sort of top-up qualification a bricklayer has to do just to stay current or not?
No, do you know what? My dad found like the MVQ, I think it was the MVQ card, or it was like the health and safety card that you need on site now. It only went for like 5 years. He must have been cleaning out the drawers the other day and he'd sent it to me. And it's like a little driving license kind of thing. And he said, looks like this has expired, mate. It like expired in 2013 or whatever.
Yeah.
I don't keep any of that. I've got no interest. He just says to me, oh, Charlie, you don't want to come back and do any of that. I said, you're right. I see my mates doing it day in, day out. Just don't interest me, Clem.
No, but it's a loaded question because I don't know if you've had this chat, but obviously we've had him on the Official EFL podcast before. Albert Adoma is fully qualified painter and decorator. So what I'm thinking is you guys, you're halfway there. You want to get through the squad, see if Senny Dieng's done a little bit of plumbing or something like that. Or,
yeah,
you know,
way.
Rob Dickey's a roofer secretly or something.
Could
you could have a full-scale company going, eh?
Do you know what? I'm not sure the younger lads would appreciate getting up at 6 o'clock in the morning, mate. Getting in a van with six or seven other blokes.
Yeah.
No, I don't think it's for them.
No. You've done so well for yourself. You are starting
Thank
to
you,
make
mate.
Me sick now, though, mate, because you're already a fully qualified bricklayer and were. As you say, you've got this glittering career, played in the Premier League, all the rest of it. And now you are moving on to my turf, into broadcasting. No, I mean, we're talking
I'll never
to you
step
today.
On your toes. I'll
you
never
were,
step.
But...
I know, do you know what? I'm just... I got approached to do it, I'd say, two summers. No, not even two summers. Last year. So everything kind of went so fast. Asked to do radio shows, TV, podcasts. And then I thought, you know what? I'm quite good at this. I don't mind it. A few people give me like a good thing. And then I'd done one with the BBC. And the, but I'd done the training before. Only one like training thing, talking on Zoom. And he was saying to me, have you ever done this before? I was like, no. He's like, you'll be absolutely fine. I'd done BBC Radio 5 Live on a commentary game of Fulham versus Leicester. And he ran me back and was, and I said, right, come on, tell me what I need to improve on. He was like, no, just don't need to do nothing. Just keep explaining the situations like you do on the radio. And he said, it'll all work out. And I've kind of just grabbed the bull by the horns and see where he takes us, mate.
And Mark Warburton's totally supportive of this. He knows that this is where you are in your career.
Yeah, he has. And he's, I know myself, Clem, like if I overstep it, go overdoing it one way and I'm not performing the other, then I'm not naive enough to think, oh, I know when I need to pull back and when not to. But yeah, he's very supportive of it. He just, like I said, we've got a great relationship, a very honest relationship. And I'll go back to 2 weeks ago when my nan passed. It was before the Bournemouth game. And I went in my travelling kit and stuff and he pulled me in and said, you're not going, like, I'm not taking you. And I was footballer. I was like, what do you mean you're not taking me? He's like, no, you need to be at home with your wife, you need to be with your family and all that kind of thing. He's like, no, I'm going to go. He's like, you're not. Train now and then you go home. And I was like, okay, like no problem. I come home, I was on the phone to my wife, like, why aren't he taking me? And then in the evening, my nan passed away. And then I just realised that football is so second to what the family life is, and I appreciate everything that he's done for me over the last 10 months that I've been able to work with him.
That is amazing management, isn't it? To be so selfless, to not think about the team and the impact you could have on his work, but to put you first. It's a life lesson for anybody that employs people who's listening to the Official EFL podcast.
That's what I mean, Clem. And I was being on the other side. It's like, why is he doing this for? I want to play. I said to my wife, my nan's there. I know it's going to happen. But look, until it happens, like I'm here. Obviously, he was seeing something completely different. He was like, no, Chaz, you need to be with your family and all that kind of stuff. And I've got a lot of respect for the manager. And I look forward to working with him for many years to come.
Yeah. What was your nan's name, mate?
Carol. Carol Wordley.
She must be very proud of you. Was she a football fan? Or did she learn to be a football fan?
I think she learned to be a football fan. My granddad lives around the corner from me, 82. I was fortunate they just moved up closer to me, really, Clem. And they live with me for me and my wife and the family for 3 weeks while they're getting the house sorted in the summer. So it was great to have them. And they moved back. But whenever I was on the telly or anything like that, she'd be worried. She'd go and sit in the kitchen. My granddad would watch. And then if I'd scored, she'd come in. But she'd be too scared to see if I got hurt. So she didn't like it or anything. But they loved it. Imagine being they're so proud, I think, my granddad and my nan and all my family, I guess. I think who would have, like I say, mate, who would have expected it 13 years ago to do what I have now? Hopefully I look back, all my family, I've made them all proud.
Rest in peace, Carol. Honestly, Charlie, what an inspiring chat to have had with you, mate. Good luck with everything. Thank you, mate. Apart from all, obviously, don't get too good at broadcasting, because I don't want you ousting me with bits of work in the future, all right?
No, I've got plenty of football. I've got plenty of football, plenty of goals still to score, mate. That's for later down the line.
Thanks, Charlie.
No worries, Clem, top man.
What an amazing insight that was, wasn't it? Elsewhere in the Sky Bet Championship, Fulham demonstrated the most amazing support for 13-year-old fan Reece Porter, who was born with cerebral palsy and having been abused and mocked on social media, was at the centre of the team's goal celebrations in their draw at Bristol City. 5 goals in 2 games for our guest last week, Ben Brereton-Diaz, means he's now got 9 in Blackburn Rovers' first 10 games and already passed his tally for the whole of last season. In stark contrast, Cardiff City's form continues to deteriorate. It's now 5 defeats in 6 for them, including their last 4, and they've shipped 9 goals in their last 2.
The official EFL podcast with Mark Clement.
Before we move on, let's take a moment to celebrate the remarkable career of one of English football, and indeed the Football League's all-time greats. Affectionately known as Sir Roger to Liverpool fans, he scored 244 league goals in 404 games for the club, a record that still stands to this day. A member of Sir Alf Ramsey's World Cup winning squad in 1966, he won a total of 34 caps for England, scoring 18 goals, 3 of which were during the tournament where he played in all 6 of his country's games. His career took him to Bolton Wanderers, but it was at Anfield that he proved himself to be one of the greatest goal scorers this country has ever produced. He passed away this week at the age of 83, Sir Roger Hunt. And in a segue you'd almost think we'd planned, this weekend in Sky Bet League One, John Coleman's Accrington Stanley entertained Paul Cook's Ipswich Town. Not only did Paul play for John at Accrington and briefly manage the club when John tried his hand elsewhere, not only did the two grow up together and are still lifelong friends, but they're also both diehard Liverpool fans. Well, guys, while I've got you, John, where would Roger Hunt fit into the sort of pantheon of Liverpool greats?
Well, you know, when I was growing up, you know, obviously Liverpool fan, my brother, I was lucky. My mum and dad were Evertonians, but luckily my brother showed me the path of righteousness. And I only actually got to see him over twice, because my dad was Evertonian, he wouldn't take us to the games much. And my brother eventually started taking me. But, you know, to play in the World Cup final, you know, to win it. And the thing about Roger Hunt, it's not just his footballing ability. You know, he was known as one of the last of the Sir Gentlemen of football. And I think, you know, he'd be sadly missed by a lot of Liverpool fans. And the goals record goes, you know, it wasn't as in the public domain as it is now. But the fact of how many goals he scored for Liverpool, you know, and all the ones who me and Paul go to match with, they all love him to bits. So, you know, he is a legend of Liverpool.
I mean, the thing I always find as well, Cookie, is that it's a kind of understated reverence when he's mentioned. You know, you mentioned the Liverpool greats and you look down the top 25, whatever, and it's all the obvious ones, Dalglish, Rush, Stevie G, etc. And yet, with Liverpool fans themselves, he is right up there, isn't he?
I think with the goals scored, and, you know, I think when Shankly obviously took over Liverpool and, you know, winning the FA Cup all them years ago now, and the first big trophy for Liverpool supporters, and obviously to go on to play for England and be one of them World Cup members, and, you know, to just be spoken about as well as he's been spoken about, I think that just pays a glowing tribute to the man himself, and I think he will be very, very sadly missed, that's for sure.
He will indeed. Right, what I love about this is, and I'm going to level with the listeners to the official EFL podcast, we're actually recording this just after 7 o'clock in the morning. But, John, this is the time when you two catch up anyway, isn't it? Because you're both insomniacs, aren't you?
Neither of us sleep. We know that we can get each other this sad. And, you know, he's generally busy throughout the day, so it is a good morning to speak. And we're both always up early, dead early, so, you know.
Yeah. You both look as though you can need a cup of coffee, mind. I mean, I've had to get up an hour before this to...
I've got no oil, Pete and Clem, you know, just Simon and Martin.
Take us back then, Cookie. What's your first memory of John?
Oh, my God. We're going back a long time, John, aren't we? Back a long, long, long time when we were very young children. You know, and I think I was lucky enough to play in a football team that John was playing in. And John probably be a little bit older than me. But we played for a team probably called St. Joseph's in Kirby. And that was our first recollection.
Yeah, Dixie Baines was Leighton Baines' granddad. Yeah. He was on the team. So he was mates with both our late fathers. So.
Yeah.
Wow.
And that's where we started.
Yeah. And this has remained ever since. I mean, we're talking weddings, family christenings, the full lot.
Yeah, unfortunately. I know it's been right through our football days, you know, supporting each other, going to match together, you know, holidays together, you know, working together, playing for John, working for John, and obviously then going on to be sort of competitors, if you like, but we've always stayed friends.
Yeah. So have you ever fallen out?
No, once or twice, but not for long.
Can you agree on your unified answer to this question, please? Go on. No.
It depends on what you call falling out.
Not talking to each other?
No, we never fall out. I think by John's admission, I think we both fiercely want to win. And we're both fiercely competitive. And that comes from probably everything that we've done. You know, whether that would be playing golf together, you know, playing hearts on the bus together. You know, whatever it's been. And I think when you get people like that and they come into competition, it's like this week, for example, we haven't really spoke. And that's only out of respect for each other. You know, because we're going to meet on Saturday afternoon.
Yeah. Are you both, John, like full of caution right now, being very careful not to say anything that the other one can use against them?
I'm not. We haven't won all year.
Have you had to compromise this week, John? Have you not maybe rung it? How many times normally would you ring each other in a week?
We speak about two or three times a week, but, you know, obviously you're building up to a game and you've got your own ideas about what you're going to be approaching the game, you know, and you're not going to be an open book this week, but, you know, that'll soon be gone at 5 o'clock, whatever the result is.
Yeah. I mean, what, you know, you talked about support, Cookie. I mean, so if John's having a tough time or you're having a tough time, the other one will be kind of there to bounce off, chuck ideas, give encouragement, that kind of thing.
John very, very rarely has a tough time. He's probably on the toughest run of his managerial career. He hasn't won for two. I think, and to be fair, Clem, I think John's, you know, what John's achievements have been at Accrington are absolutely frightening. You know, to have a club of that size, of that stature, and to have them where they were last year after they won a Charlton away live on Sky, you know, where everyone in the league feared them, you know, that they could go up. And I don't think John's achievements are ever properly acknowledged with Accrington, because all of a sudden now, we just take it as a given that Accrington are a top half League One team. And that's an unbelievable achievement, because if you look at Ipswich and what we've done in the transfer market and that, we're 19th in the league. And that shows how difficult the division is.
Yeah. I would just like to say, some of us, when presenting on final score earlier in the season and Accrington were in their highest position ever, did talk about it incessantly for the entire afternoon. So let me just say that. John, I guess the biggest compliment I can pay you is you hate that little old Accrington tag, and it takes something to keep repositioning expectations, but with the same individual at the helm, does it not?
Well, it is, but, you know, you'd have to realise we are what we are, and sometimes it does annoy you, oh yeah, the plucky underdog and that, like, you don't want to be that. But we were laughing like the other day, because I had a little bit of a moan after the Wigan game, because, like, you know, they're bringing on players that are on double our top pay player, and they're bringing them on as subs, and me and Paul were laughing about it the other day, and he said, we'll become an arm to your place, don't worry. And I was laughing with him. I said, I believe you've got Jamie Oliver as your club chef. But listen, you know, it is what it is. You know, you go on about supporting each other, and sometimes you don't need a phone call when you've won. You know, it's when you've had a thumping, or when you've had a really shock result, and you're thinking, God. And that's when you probably need to just chat with people and say, you know, and you know, pour your heart out to people. But you know, football is such a tough game, and as Paul will tell you, it's so demanding, and it can shock you at any given moment, when especially when you're not expecting it, and you just got to continually keep picking yourself up off the floor.
Yeah. I mean, Paul, you know, you did have a tough time start of the season getting going and things. Is that where a good mate like John keeps you in your groove of your own beliefs, your own principles, doesn't let you chop and change and compromise, somebody to bounce off like that?
100%, John's right. I think when you win, everything takes care of itself, doesn't it? You just fall into that mode that everything you're doing is properly. But the reality is probably when you're losing, everything you were doing is proper as well. It's just that the results affect us so much. And, you know, in this industry, I think one of the things we all have to learn, I don't think there's many people who haven't had a bad run at some point in their career. And I think it's just how you manage yourself and your staff and also the friends, because as John will tell you, you have very few people you can talk to properly. You know, very, very few. You know, there's very few people who want people to do well, you know, because our industry is a selfish one, if you like. It's very much a, you know, it's all about us and it's all about me type of thing. But, you know, John's certainly someone, and Accrington's results are someone, and also because I've managed and played for Accrington, that I find it really good when they're winning and they're doing well, albeit when they're in our league. I like them below us, by the way, Clem. I've got to tell you that. I don't like going over there where they're clear of me at the minute. But that's just it. It just highlights the job that's John, Jimmy's done there at the club. You know, the stadium's come on no end now. You know, I was really pleased last time I went there. The car parks are excellent. Because at one time, people spoke about them with disdain, and that's not right. You know, because Accrington have come so far as a club. You know, John's probably sold more players than most managers manage. You know, that just shows how difficult John's job can be when every year you're putting nearly a new team together, Clem. You know, and that, as I've found out this year, we put 19 or 20 together. And if you watched us play against Bolton, Clem, it looked like we put about 40 together because they just didn't know each other. You know, and that's the difficulty of football sometimes. You know, it's something that sometimes people don't factor in. You know, about how long does it take for team spirit to develop? You know, for partnerships on a pitch to grow. You know, I think John's very similar to me. We love partnerships. You know, we love lads who play well together. You know, it's something that doesn't happen overnight. And with John's Accrington teams in general, I don't know what percentage it is, but I would imagine it might be as much as 33% every year changes. And that's a big percentage of your team to change, Glenn.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, especially John, because I'm guessing, you know, the scouting very much comes down to yours and Jimmy Bell's personal judgment. Well, I was about to say to you, and that in itself is a skill, because when you're keeping your eye on trying to win 46 games and at the same time you're having to look at who you might bring in next year because, you know, Barry Fry's sniffing around for your goalkeeper, I tell you what, that takes some doing, John, doesn't it?
I'm lucky in the fact that I've got great coaches with me. So, you know, I've got Jimmy, who's been, you know, he's been like a rock to me, being assistant manager for as long, well, 25 years. And I've got John Doolan as well, the terrific coaches. They don't get the credit they deserve for the coaching that they do. You know, everyone thinks about Accrington, so it's gung-ho and it's great team spirit and we all have a go, we all our sleeves up. But they don't know the preparation that goes into it. You know, John and Jimmy do a lot on the analysis of the games, the opposition. The coaching is very good, I think, you know, and Paul, you know, played a big part when we got promoted, and you know, when we were analysing teams and we spent a lot of time on shape and how we were going to play. And people don't see that. They don't see the minutes that are getting put in. And as you're going back before, you know, about the turnover of players, and you know, when Paul had a few strange results at the start of the season, and I'm on the phone to him saying, listen, you've got that many good players, you'll get it right eventually. And I knew it was going to get right eventually when they were going to play us. So, yeah, yeah, so they get the six this week. We lose five. You do the maths.
Yeah. I did look at the recent stats and I did think, Cookie, as much as you love the man, his team have shipped 14 in the last four and you scored six the other night. So you must be rubbing your hands together, aren't you?
Well, it's ironic, Clem. And John will tell you, when we were probably in the height of despair at Ipswich, we actually spoke at it would be around the time when we go to Accrington that we'll probably be up and running. And John acknowledged that. It was because we were going to have Sammy Morsey available, one or two of the other players. And by the way, Clem, as you know, and I'm not being disrespectful to anyone, Accrington is one of the toughest places you can go.
Yeah.
Every club I've managed has been beaten at Accrington. Every single club. So there's a really good consistency there going up there Saturday. Yeah. And as John knows, there's no better game for Accrington than Ipswich at home on Saturday. Yeah. There's no better game. Everyone will be writing Accrington off. Everyone will be saying Ipswich are up and running. There'll be a full crowd in there. And it's absolutely made for Accrington. And it's also made for us, by the way, to go and enjoy a really good game.
Yeah. I love the way that I think when you were praising Accrington about 5 minutes ago in this chat, you chose to commend the car park before you chose to commend his starting lineup.
Clem, I was being very unforgiving there, by the way, because when I went in, it's the whole stadium. It's the concourse. The pitch is excellent. Do you know, the chairman now, you know, Andy, has done an amazing job at that football club because he's brought really good stability to the club. And that's helped John to be able to put a team on together that, as John says, is very, very well coached. Knows, and there's no, as John will tell you now, Clem, there's no secrets in football anymore. There's none. You know, John knows every single one of our players who'll turn up Saturday. He knows how we'll play and he knows what we'll do. You know, for us, we'll have watched Accrington a lot, albeit they're on a little difficult run at the minute, which John will get them out of, like he always does. You know, and for us, it's just a case of going up there and doing our best to try and win a game. For John and his team, it'll be another game where, with all due respect, there's many a big club have left Accrington with nothing, Clem, and that's 100% true.
I have to tell you, I've just remembered one of my favourite ever moments in football. It was Aki against Torquay. Oh, gosh, when would that have been? Was that the game you had to win to stay in the league, John?
Yeah, we had to win to stay up.
That's right. And you got sent off. You were overdoing it in the technical area. And of course, the technical area at your place is all you did was took one step to your left over a breeze block wall and just stood on the other side of it. And you'd gone to the stands. It was brilliant.
Yeah, Peter Cabana scored the last kick of the game, was a free kick.
That's right.
Last minute. And we won 1-0.
Yeah.
And the chairman had let everybody in for nothing. So it was a bumper crowd, about 4,000 there.
Yeah.
And then he thought, well, we'll keep some of them because it was a great, great day. Like, and the next week we had about 1,400.
Yeah. Paul, I must ask you because Charlie Austin was on a little bit earlier and he was talking about how Mark Warburton dealt with him. Charlie's grandma passed away recently.
Yes.
In the middle of that bad run, you lost your old man. I mean, when you're in such a pressurised role and under scrutiny, just how hard is it to juggle those two sides of life, professional pride with obviously a moment of huge significance in your personal life?
I think what you're trying to do, Clem, I think, again, and I would imagine everyone's different, I think you just try and block it out, don't you? You know, you absolutely block it out. I made a decision with my family that I wasn't going to go home. You know, I said goodbye to my dad on a Sunday.
Sorry, mate. I didn't mean to take you down this kind of avenue. I think you've shown...
It's okay, Clem. It's okay. I still made the decision with my family, you know, that once he passed away, I'd stay in Ipswich. And it was difficult.
Yeah. I only mention it because I think you showed great courage and I don't think a lot of people realised what was going on. They were just focusing on...
It's what my dad would have wanted, Clem.
Yeah, 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 quite. 100%. Paul, I didn't mean to upset you and I'm sorry if that brings that back.
No problem.
It's obviously still very raw. The other thing I did want to talk to the pair of you about, John, was just your alumni of people that have worked with you because obviously Paul... Liam Richardson's stepped out on his own right now and had a period while you were away from the club in sort of managing it, didn't he? And the other one is Anthony Barry, quite remarkable. Started with you, then went off to be part of Paul's backroom staff at Wigan Athletic, and then a year later goes from relegation from the Championship in those awful administration points deduction to winning the Champions League alongside Thomas Tuchel at Chelsea. A remarkable sort of transition in his career.
Yeah, he's done fantastic. You know, and you know, Paul promoted him into the first team environment and gave him his first shot at the first team environment. And funny enough, we at that moment when Paul did take him to Wigan, we were on the verge of trying to offer him something at Accrington. So the fact that he's embraced first in football, he's so meticulous about his work. He'll go the extra mile like you wouldn't believe, spending time with the players. And he's done fantastically well. And you know, going too much into it, his dad is a friend of mine. And we were at the funeral last week, and I had a good chat with him. And they're mad Liverpool fans. And I said, well, come on. I said, when they play Liverpool, you must want Chelsea to win. He went, no chance. No chance. And even his brother was there, Franny. And it's amazing how they can detach themselves from it because, you know, if it was us and our family, you'd want them to jump through hoops. But the love for Liverpool in the city is unbelievable. And can't waver it. Honestly, you can't waver it. And so if Liverpool and Chelsea met in the European Cup final, all his family is only one team to win, that's Liverpool.
I think one of the things, Clem, and speaking about people, I think one of the things that a lot of friends of both John and myself, and how we probably even recruit people around us, is just a general love of football, Clem. You know, it's like we'll go into work now and we'll be speaking about the match. Some of the players don't even watch the football anymore. You know, and the likes of myself and John, the greatest respect, we just live our life for it. You know, and that does include Liverpool Football Club, as you can see with John's scouting network. And if you don't love it, you wouldn't last very long around us, Clem. That's the brutal truth of it.
Yeah. The problem is, of course, our generation, and I'm a similar age to the two of you, there wasn't such football on the television. It was a state occasion. When a Liverpool was in Europe and you went, you see the match last night, half the country had watched that. Of course, what happens now is no criticism of the current broadcasting deals, but he's watched a Football League trophy game. He's watched a Champions League game. He's watched a Premier League game. So it dilutes the pot, don't you think? There isn't that unifying force that there was there once before. Now, final couple of questions. Have either of you got any regrets of maybe admitting your Achilles heel a few weeks ago, something that wasn't going right in your team, and then suddenly realise it could be used against you this coming weekend?
I told John all my players will be fit and available for Accrington at the Arc, Clem.
Is that a good thing or a bad thing, Cookie?
We've got Kyle Edwards back in the squad as well for Saturday, so it can't get any worse for John with our squad.
Oh.
He told me he'd be armed and dangerous, and he is.
It was actually ironic, Clem, because for our pathway of our team and how we looked at it, and obviously for Morsy to come in the team, who's going to captain the team, who's played for me before, it was always going to be Accrington away where we felt we'd not be winning, Clem, but we'd actually be up and running. Do you know, we'd have had time to play together with all our injuries, everyone's cleared of COVID, people have got games. So I said to John, even 6 weeks ago, do you know, we've actually looked at your game, John, as the game where we'll probably turn up ready to play. Now, obviously, that's gone really well for us Tuesday night for the first time, Clem, which is great. Do you know, but we've got a lot of hard work to do, as you know, with any good team that's brought a lot of new players in. Sorry, the drive to become a good team is there. We're just not a good team yet. We're just a new team, but we do have a lot of good players. That's 100% for sure.
One of the problems I've got, Clem, is that, you know, they've scored six in the week and we've left five in. And they've got some really top players coming in. I'm not capable of parking the bus. So I'm going to go all out to win. And I can't change the way I am, and I never will. You know, I just couldn't physically put out a team at home not to get beat. So we'll be going out all out to win.
Stop. Never mind, mate. I'm smelling mind games going on here. The excessive Accrington compliments. Ipswich are brilliant and I'll be going all out attack. I'm not here just to be in the middle of the two of you to try and tip that balance, you know. I thought I was bringing two mates together. Final question. Go on.
2 cents off at 3:05.
Don't even think about it. And somebody who's listening to this late on Sunday morning will be going for all those niceties. The two of them were shelling seven shades of you-know-what out of each other. Guys, that was an absolute joy. I'm going to let you get on with your work. May the best team win this coming weekend. Great to talk to you both.
Cheers.
Brilliant, Clem. Thanks, John.
Cheers, Paul.
See you soon, guys. Yeah.
Elsewhere in Sky Bet League One, 6 more points for Sunderland. It's now 7 goals in 9 for the Loch Ness Drogba, Ross Stewart. It's now 9 in 10 for Morecambe's Cole Stockton. And after 5 consecutive wins, Wigan Athletic were on the other end of only a third away win in approaching a year for Sheffield Wednesday. Meanwhile, in Sky Bet League Two, only one round of fixtures. The top three, Forest Green Rovers, Leighton Orient and Harrogate Town, all drew without scoring. It was the first game since the unveiling of a statue situated in his former seat of Rochdale's deceased superfan David Cluffy Clough. He won't have enjoyed the match though, as visitors Oldham Athletic picked up their second win of the season. That's it for this episode. A big thank you to Paul Cook, John Coleman and Charlie Austin. If you've enjoyed it, please do give us a 5-star rating, press the subscribe button and share on your socials. If you'd like to get in touch, our email address is podcast@efl.com. That's podcast@efl.com. My name's Mark Clement. Thanks very much for listening. Join us again soon for another episode of
The Official EFL Podcast.